St. James and Pamela Hughes, Arizona's opioid epidemic.
Thank you for joining us for this. If you've listened to any part of this series, we've taken the 10 o'clock hour every day this week to look at Arizona's opioid epidemic from some different angles. I'll remind you that all of the parts are available via podcast. You can go back and listen if you missed any of it. And you want to educate yourself. You want to learn more. Or as we know... there's many of you that opioids have touched your life in one way or the other.
Yeah, and when we say learn more, I mean, we talk with Gabriel, who is an addict and who is now sober. We talked with Lori, who is a chronic pain patient and needs these pills to survive. So a lot of different angles we've taken a deep dive into this week. And we wanted to wrap things up today with taking a closer look at what the state of Arizona is doing when it comes to the opioid epidemic. And so we sat down and we talked with Jessica Rigler with the Arizona Department of Health Services.
About 2 years ago, the governor actually declared a public health emergency, and that brought a lot more resources to bear on our efforts.
You know, one of the things we wanted to understand is kind of as a use the term a baseline. Where is Arizona in this epidemic?
Unfortunately, we are seeing a continued increase in the number of individuals who are dying due to an opioid overdose. It'll take a little bit of time to turn that tide, but we see about 1,000 deaths in 2018 from individuals due to opioids.
Wow.
Currently, our data is showing about 250 overdoses a month, and that's fatal and non-fatal overdoses.
And you know, Bruce, when we often talk about overdoses, fatal, non-fatal. The other thing that we've talked about is that drug addiction, when it comes to opioids, really knows no bounds, right? This isn't an addiction for, you know, one community or one demographic or, you know, one gender or one age group or socioeconomic. No, it has found its way into so many parts of our community. And Jessica broke down some of those demographics.
We certainly see opioid overdoses affecting individuals across the spectrum in Arizona. One of the things that we look at is the age breakdown for opioid overdoses. And we see it across all age ranges from young children in their early teens all the way up to individuals over the age of 74 years old. About 30% of our cases are in our young adults, so those between 25 and 34 years old. And traditionally, we see this affecting men more than women, although we still have a significant number of women who are impacted.
That's Jessica Rigler with the Arizona Department of Health Services, also an agency here that is tasked with trying to help people, treating this as a health issue, not a law enforcement issue. And we asked Jessica about the resources available.
We have a great resource, what we refer to as the OAR line. O-A-R, it's the Opioid Assistance and Referral Line. And that's a number that individuals can call if they're looking to be linked up to treatment resources in their community or if they have questions about opioid use disorder. It's also free for clinicians to call if they have questions about treating someone with opioid use disorder or prescribing opioids in general.
All right. So the number for the OAR line, the Opioid Assistant and Referral Line, 888-688-4222. Now, I also realize that you may be driving in your car right now, can't write that down, and nobody can remember phone numbers these days.
I can.
So we've tweeted it out for you at Bruce and Pamela. The information for the OAR line, it's called the Opioid Assistance and Referral Line. So you can have those resources. You can have that help.
You know where to turn.
And that's sometimes hard to figure out for some people.
It's hard to navigate,
like,
to say the least.
Where do I even begin?
And again, the Arizona Department of Health Services approaches this as a public health issue. And, you know, one of the things that we're trying to understand, we heard a little bit of it yesterday about how difficult it is for some people to get their needed opioids.
Chronic pain sufferers.
Exactly. But we asked Jessica Rigler with the Arizona Department of Health Services, what is the impact of all these changes in law?
since the legislation has gone into effect, we've seen an 18% decrease in the total number of opioid prescriptions filled in Arizona. We've also seen a 29% decrease in the average dosage that's prescribed for all of our Arizona patients. And even more excitingly, a 55% decrease in the number of opioid naive patients who were prescribed opioids for 5 days or more. Mm-hmm. And again, we want to keep that prescription to less than 5 days.
Okay, so I think that that's an important distinction, too. Mm-hmm. Why has the state of Arizona decided, they call it opioid naive, meaning you, I think it is, you haven't had an opioid prescription for 90 days.
Is that what it is?
60
opioid
or 90 days.
Naive.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's the first prescription you've had for a pain med in a long time is really what this is kind of getting down to.
And how it impacts you.
And why are they limiting it to 5 days? Why is 5 days an important number?
There's been quite a bit of research out there that shows that any prescription above 5 days for individuals who are opioid naive, so they haven't been on opioids for the last 90 days or so, is likely to lead to some kind of opioid use disorder.
You know, and that was something that I think when we talk about opioids, and this was, you know, when we talked to the Attorney General's office on Tuesday, by the way, is when we had the Arizona Attorney General's office in, who are involved in litigation against these drug companies, is that did the drug companies know how addictive these drugs were? Did they know that you can become dependent in some way, shape, or form after just 5 days of use? And was that all part of their marketing strategy to commit fraud on the American public and the American medical community by pushing these drugs, knowing it was going to lead to more prescriptions?
But I think that 5 days, that number, is important for people to really wrap their brains
around. Sounds really low.
Well, here, yes, you could see
firefighters
from that,
did intentional burning around some homes.
You could see it from that perspective, and you'd be right. For me, like, I've taken opioids when I've had surgery in the past, mm-hmm. and you know, for me, I'm going like, people need this kind of medication. And I know that there was a point in time where my mom was going to have surgery and they were talking about, you know, potential opioids and she was afraid to take them. I'm like, Mom, if you need it, you need to take it. Because I think that there is now this fear of taking anything, right?
Yes.
And we even heard that from our chronic pain doctor.
The backlash.
Who was saying, you know, there are young people out there who have had some traumatic injuries and they're even afraid to take a Tylenol, right? Mm-hmm. Because of all this talk about drugs, which is a good discussion to be had. But when you find out that, like, 5 days seems to be the tipping point. Mm-hmm. So if you need it for a day or two, you should be pretty
good.
You know what I mean? But if you... if you're, you know, on it for 30 days, or you're going to be,
you're really
in
putting
a problem.
Yourself at risk. I mean, that's just the reality of it. That does not mean everyone.
Nope.
It does not mean all.
Nope.
It means that when you look at the numbers, there is a steep curve
at 5 days.
At 5 days, it starts going through the roof. So, you know, one of the things, again, we're talking to Jessica Regler with the Arizona Department of Health Services, trying to understand kind of where we are and where we're headed.
We expect over the next couple of years to continue to see increases in the number of opioid overdoses and deaths, but we're hoping with improved treatment capabilities across the state, better prescribing practices and knowledge among our clinicians, and destigmatization of the issues so that our communities can really support individuals who are suffering, we'll start to see decreases.
Yeah, I think that's kind of sad to hear that the Arizona Department of Health Services acknowledges and understands we are not at the peak of this epidemic.
It's going to get worse before it gets better.
And, you know, one of the things, and I want to say the doctor is the one who gave me the mental image of this, of the squeezing of a balloon, where he said, keep in mind, as we make it harder for people to get opioids, as we cut people off of opioids, that doesn't mean they have solved their addiction or dependency problem. It just means they're going to go somewhere else. That somewhere else, as we learned from talking to our addict, heroin is a cheap, comparatively cheap substitute for opioids. So what I hear them saying is we can do all the legal stuff you want when it comes to doctors and opioids, but we can't do anything about people that are dependent on it turning to heroin.
Right. So one individual that we spoke to this week during our week-long series of Arizona's opioid epidemic was Gabriel. And Gabriel's story is pretty powerful, so powerful that We want you to stick around. We're going to play you some aspects of that interview coming up here next.
Absolutely. Arizona's opioid epidemic, day five. The road to recovery continues next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. Arizona's opioid epidemic.
Our Facebook page, the Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes Show, our Twitter feed at Bruce and Pamela are good places to go if you want to follow along, links to some of the things we've done. We have videos up from some of our guests every day focusing on a different aspect of Arizona's opioid epidemic. And today, as we kind of wrap things up, we just heard from the Arizona Department of Health Services about the things they're doing. Resources, by the way, which we've tweeted out as well, if you are someone who is suffering and or you have a friend, family member, loved one who is suffering as well. But I thought we really did start out of the gates pretty good. You know, I don't want to dislocate my bad shoulder patting myself on the back, but Monday's show I thought was amazing. I really, really, let me say, I'm proud of Monday's show.
And I'm proud of it because it told the story, the human aspect of addiction. Y'all think you know what addiction looks like. And we hear so many numbers when it comes to opioids. And those are important. But so are the stories behind it, where you meet people and you hear about what they went through. And that's where on Monday we met Gabriel. Take a listen to Gabriel's story.
You know, I started off with the pills, you know, doing oxycodone, hydrocodone, that kind of stuff. Stuff that you can find in your medicine cabinet. Started with that and then very quickly from there, you know, moved on to heroin. But I started using, you know, heroin daily at the age of 13 and then very quickly started using heroin intravenously.
13 years old. 13 years old. And I'm getting, I'm thinking of 13 year old, what are we, seventh grade, eighth grade, somewhere like that? With a needle in your arm? So one of the things I want to understand, and I'm lucky in this sense. I say obviously, I don't believe I've ever been addicted or dependent on anything. I'm the square in the room. No drugs or alcohol ever in my life. So I wanted to understand, how do you go from pills to heroin? Because to me, it seems like a big jump.
Pills are expensive. So the same intoxication that I get for $20 worth of pills, you know, lasts maybe 2 or 3 hours out of the day. If I spend $20 on heroin, I can be high the whole day.
Economics.
Strict economics.
It's economics. And when you think of somebody being 13.
$20.
The idea. I'm still wrapping my head around the fact that like heroin's so cheap.
I'm okay. How about just, this? You wrap your head around
that.
I wrap my head around, how is a 13-year-old getting heroin?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of good questions about
Do you know what I mean?
And the first time that I did heroin, it wasn't something that I wanted to do. I don't think any kid or any teenager thinks, hey, this is what I want to do when I grow up. This is how I want to, you know, be early adolescence is inject heroin. I knew this wasn't something that I wanted to continue to do or something that I even wanted to do in the first place. So I very quickly, after I started using heroin, tried to seek treatment, you know, detoxes, hospitals, and it just wasn't working. By the time I was 16, I had gone into 16 different treatment facilities.
So you've got the numbers here. At 13, he started using heroin. By 16, he'd been in and out of 16 different treatment centers. I'm happy to let you know, if you missed the interview on Monday, that Gabriel has now been sober for 7 years.
You can watch the video. We actually have a video up as well.
And so talking about addiction, hearing the stories of addiction is important. But not everybody who takes an opioid is addicted.
Fair.
There are segments of our community, portions of our population that need this medication to survive. I'm talking about the chronic pain sufferers out there. We've heard you. We know you're there.
Yeah.
We're not trying to demonize you. We recognize that there is a need for this medication in some cases. And in fact, in Lori's case, because yesterday we sat down and we met Lori. And she suffers from fibromyalgia. She also has so many back issues. I mean, she went through the whole list of not only the ailments that she's suffering from, but also the different steps she has taken to try to fix them. We're talking about chiropractic
all the other
care
things.
And acupuncture and massage and changing her diet. Like, she doesn't go straight to the opioid, but needs to have that in her toolbox if and when it gets that bad.
I mean, it's a stigma for me that I face every day when I go to reach for that pill if I need one, because then I, in my mind, I'm like, I'm hearing these words, abuser, addict, you know, because that's what the media and everything's blowing up right now. And yeah, we may have an issue, but I think we need to be celebrated that we are managing life as best as we can.
So Lori is celebrating that, yes, she's managing life. And you know what? I'm also celebrating Gabriel, who sobered up and is now helping out.
As soon as I sobered up and started to believe that I could actually live a life of sobriety and be a normal member of society, the only thing that I thought that I could possibly ever do was help other people like me.
Arizona's opioid epidemic, our day five and final day, the road to recovery. And we thought that we started through the eyes of an addict, talking to Gabriel, hearing his story of starting at the age of 13, using, and finally, well, we heard about the depths, and then finally his recovery. But why don't we end it with another one of those stories? And somebody that you may be familiar with, somebody you probably watched on TV.
You welcomed into your home.
Absolutely. Brandon Lee, former TV3 anchor, all right? He left recently, just last year, has an amazing story of abuse, addiction, and redemption, and recovery. And we're going to talk to Brandon next about his struggle with addiction and his message of hope for others that are going through something similar, really serving as an example. Arizona's opioid epidemic. Our conversation continues next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. Arizona's opioid epidemic.
It's been an amazing week. It's been a week of, I think, learning. It's been a week of emotion. Made me think about some things differently this week as we talked about the opioid epidemic here in Arizona and how it's affected people from a variety of different angles. And we started on Monday talking to a young man who started using opioids and heroin, transitioned to heroin pretty quickly at the age of 13, and heard about his story. And it really set the tone for the week, I think. And we thought, what better way than to kind of wrap up our deep dive than to bring it back to someone who knows firsthand exactly what that feels like.
Yeah, his battle the demons of addiction is back on the other side of it. And this may surprise you, because joining us right now in studio is Brandon Lee. And Brandon, you may have welcomed into your home for years right here in the Valley, because Brandon, former 3TV news anchor, you'd reported for them for years. I know I'm telling you your own bio at this point in time.
You can keep going. Oh, my goodness.
But right now, I'm going to
Emmy award winning. Yeah. Throw that in there every once in a while.
Let's go with the Emmy award
winning. Okay.
All right. Because I think that when you did a series right here in the Valley on opioids that you won that Emmy for.
Right.
That was kind of a turning point with you in your story, not so much with your addiction, but in the double life that you were leading. Tell our audience about that.
Yeah, so up until that point, I had about 8 years sober when I went into my news director's office and pitched this idea about shooting this story about this needle exchange program that was operating under the dark, because it was illegal, right, to have a needle exchange program giving these folks drug paraphernalia. And so I had an inside access to this group. They trusted me because I know them through 12-step recovery programs. So I was like a reporter. They're like, all right, we trust you not to burn us. And so what we did that night, we went to these needle exchange programs. And that was the first time in my life that I had actually seen. We met a kindergarten teacher in line for heroin needles. I met a mother who had her two kids in the back of a Land Rover, and the windows in the back seat lowered, and these two kids' heads popped out, and it broke my heart. And when that story aired, I was looking at a lot of the comments that, you know, viewers
inevitably you get. Yeah.
And it was bad. They were calling them scum. They were calling them trash and homeless people. And I went home that night and I cried. I cried because that was me. And I called my sponsor in my 12-step recovery program, and I said, I got to do this. I got to break my anonymity. I don't care what the repercussions are for my career. I don't care what it does to me. My purpose in life is to save people. It's not to be in news. My passion is news. My purpose is to help save people from what I went through. And so that's when I first decided I had to put a face to it. And finally, I said, hey, listen, the guy you watch The guy you tune into on the evening news used to be that junkie.
Same person.
All right. That used to be me. So is that what you think of me now? And that was the purpose of me propelling my life into this really new direction by putting a face to the opioid epidemic.
And it wasn't as though that the drug addiction was something that you had battled before you got into the news business. I mean, you did news in L.A., and it was that double life that you were leading.
It was a really scary time. When I reflect back and look at the stuff that I was doing, holding up that double life, the reason why I built that double life was this, and man, I was damn good at it, all right? Like a good addict.
A lot of addicts are.
We are very good manipulators.
I know that firsthand.
And I held on to that double life as long as I could, because so as long as my closest friends and my family never knew the depths of my addiction, then it wasn't really happening. And I could keep going on and keep going on. But the moment a close friend of mine or a family member saw how bad I had fallen, then the gig would have been up. So I held that double life as long as I could. At the depths of my addiction, I was a reporter in Los Angeles at KTLA News, and the news got over at 11 o'clock. I used to, as I was leaving the parking lot, I was a GHB addict, which is the liquid date rape drug. And you have about 15 minutes before that drug kicks in. And I would do that liquid GHB in the parking lot, and that's when I'd go to the slums of Los Angeles. And I died twice in 72 hours on the streets of Los Angeles and was brought back to life by a team of miracle workers. And it was at that time in my life when I was in the hospital, and this nurse heard me crying, and she came into my hospital room and she asked me, "Do you believe in God?" And I said, "No, I do not." And she goes, "That's okay, because God still believes in you." And she handed me this little piece of paper, and she goes, "Listen, I know at my church they have one of these AA things." She goes, "If you get out of here, will you just make me this promise that you'll go?" And I said, "Okay." And I went to that meeting. I've been sober ever since that day.
Congratulations.
Wow. Thank you.
Wow. You have a book, by the way, and I would be remiss because it is amazing. And it's one of those books, Brandon. Again, Brandon Lee, formerly of 3TV, in the studio with us. It's one of those books that you couldn't make it up. No one would believe you if he tried to do fiction like this. Your real life story, your story of abuse and how that led to addiction, which is not an unusual situation. The book is called Mascara Boy, and amazing, part amazing.
Heartbreaking.
Part heartbreaking, part
Page
chilling.
Turner.
You can't stop reading it. I put it nicely. I know you're okay because you're sitting here, but reading the book, I was like, how are we getting out of this?
I know.
How are we getting out of this?
I know. You know, looking back, there is a lot of tragic parts, especially in the childhood. And it was important. You have to understand, I grew up in Orange County, California, Newport Beach, Laguna Beach. I mean, let's just talk about it. It's like the eighth world wonder.
Yeah.
Okay, it's beautiful.
Beautiful area.
I went to private Catholic high schools. I grew up in an affluent neighborhood. My parents were super successful. My parents did not drink and they did not drug. So how does Brandon from Orange County, California, star athlete playing soccer overseas at a time in my life, how did you choose drugs at age 15 doing lines of cocaine in Laguna Beach? How? I didn't have an answer to that question until I moved here to Arizona and started doing intense therapy. And I wanted to know the why. And I looked back into my life and I did light therapy with my therapist, and we went deep into the traumas in my brain and realized that me being sexually abused repeatedly every Friday by my piano teacher. Every time I would make a mistake, he would assault me.
As a child.
Every Friday. And then my youth soccer coach used to sexually molest me. And I realized at age 15, I escaped and I felt that numbness. And all I wanted to do was chase that numbness. And sadly, I became a sex addict at age 15 in Laguna Beach. And I was having sex with men much older than me. And I remember I was also dealing with gay shame. And you cannot be gay in Orange County in the 80s and 90s. It was not socially acceptable, especially being an athlete. And so not only was I dealing with the sex abuse as a child, but I was also dealing with gay shame as a teenager. And so I was acting out with drugs and sexually, to the point I used to come home from my house after having one of these encounters, and I would look at myself in the mirror and I would physically start beating myself in my chest until I started to bruise. And I would cry and say, "You're never going to do that again. You're never going to do that again." Well, I did that with my drug use. I would come out of a drug bender saying, "I will never do that
again."
And then the next day I would know I would be doing it again.
You know, I'm listening to your story, and you're being so vulnerable with what's going on and with your book and sharing that story. And I think you're helping people. And I get the sense that that's what you want to do. So stick around with us here.
Absolutely.
Because I want to talk about that vulnerability, that decision to write this book, to put it all out there.
I do mean all.
And what you hope to achieve from it, all right?
Very good.
The book is called Mascara Boy. Brandon Lee, formerly of 3TV here in the Valley, wrote it. Maybe more importantly, lived it.
Shared it.
Maybe the best.
That's the most important.
Survived it.
Mm-hmm.
And that story of survival, that story of redemption is a great way as we wrap up our week-long focus on Arizona's opioid epidemic. We're back with more from Brandon Lee. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes, Arizona's opioid epidemic.
Brandon Lee, who you may remember, I sincerely hope you do, as an anchor over at Channel 3, where he did an amazing job for years here in the Valley, has a book out. And it is an amazing book. It's called Mascara Boy, and it ties right into everything we've been doing this week, because not only does it talk about the depths of addiction, but it really provides like a roadmap for people to get out of it.
Well, when you talk about the depths of addiction, you just kind of throw that out there.
Okay.
No. Like
Grand
Brandon,
Canyon depths?
Yeah, Brandon's here with us right now. And Brandon, you went there in this book. Like,
yeah.
you put it all out, honestly, unabashedly, and you're quite vulnerable. I mean, we say authentic, but vulnerable to put all of that in this book. Why'd you do it?
Boy, I know. So remember when the Me Too movement came out about 2 years ago, and we saw all of these people, strength in numbers, finally unburdening themselves of the trauma that had happened to them, and they felt safe because so many other people had come forward. And so suddenly all these people holding in those scars for so many years finally had this voice, because they saw other people doing this, and you know what? This happened to me too. So the reason why I wrote this book is this. I want to do an entire movement, hashtag end the stigma. I am calling on all of my sober brothers and sisters who feel safe enough, who've got a lot of time in sobriety, break your anonymity. Break your anonymity. Go onto social media. Tell your story about how you survived addiction. Put a face to it. Give that person at home who is suffering in silence a reason to come forward and ask for help and say something. It is crucial that we do this. 23 million Americans are identified as addicts. Only 3 million of that 23 million will ever go to a 12-step program or recovery. That leaves 20 million other addicts out there waiting to hear a message of hope. Multiply that by five. They've got a mom, a dad, a brother, a sister, a son, or a daughter. Those families are desperate for help, desperate for answers. Give them a safe space to come forward. We can do this as a community if we just end the stigma and the shame around addiction and recovered addicts. I don't even call myself an addict anymore. I call myself a recovered addict.
Good.
Because I want that person at home to know there is light at the end of this tunnel.
You know, I really took that, by the way, from your book, and I don't even know if you necessarily meant it like that, but it and you mentioned a little bit ago, it becomes like a self-help book at some point. You, Brandon Lee, again in studio with us, your book and your story is step by step how people can go from however bad it's been for you, whatever your darkest day of addiction was, to someone that has a completely different outlook.
Yes.
And it's back to contributing as opposed to self-destructive behavior.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was writing this book, I've always believed that the 12 steps in the 12-step program I'm a member of, that these 12 steps can help anybody in any part of their life. You don't have to be an addict to benefit from the 12 steps. So the way I wrote this book is, this is how you can apply the 12 steps to you, whether you're in you need financial sobriety. Do you have a debt problem? Do you have a spending problem? Do you have a food addiction problem? Do you have a weight problem? I did. I suffered from body dysmorphia. And so I went through the 12 steps because I wanted the reader who's reading this, who may say, oh, I'm not an addict, so that they could benefit and take away some of this for their own personal growth in their life.
This is Brandon Lee, former Channel 3 TV anchor and author of Mascara Boy. The book is going to be available when?
It's now. It's available now in every place you typically buy a book.
Booksellers, Amazon,
etc. And you know what, though? I want to get back to something, because when you talked about being vulnerable in this book and putting it all out there and hashtag.
It took a lot of work.
I can only imagine.
For my therapist to get me to that place of vulnerability, it took years.
But the book is an easy read. And I can attest to that because, you know, I've read it. But hashtag end the stigma. Like, I felt like standing up and clapping after you said that, in all reality. And I want to give people an opportunity to help end that stigma. So you heard Brandon. If any aspect about his story touched you, and I can't believe there's anybody listening right now where they haven't had that, you know, goosebump kind of moment, give us a call on the open mic line. Are you a survivor? Are you a recovering addict? End the stigma and give us a call on the open mic line to help share that story. What did you call them? Your sober brothers and sisters?
Sober brothers and sisters.
Give us a call on that open mic line. 602-200-2733. 602-200-2733. We want to help you on that journey.
Brandon, thank you so much for your time. And thank you for your work with this.
And thank you for discussing this important topic and dedicating so much time to this. We have a true crisis in this country. What you guys are doing, it matters.
Yeah. We're back with more
so
right
do you.
Here. Oh, yeah. You're here on KTAR News.